we'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Time once again to settle into your favorite easy chair for another hour of vintage radio. Later on, it's footsteps and the haunting refrain of the Whistler. But first, let's spend some time with Groucho Marx. You Bet Your Life. You Bet Your Life opened a whole new field for Groucho, who might otherwise have competed with Milton Berle as radio's most notable failure. By 1947, Marx had tried the air four times and bombed each. Marx's greatest problem on Radio Row seemed to be his reluctance to read canned material. But producer John Grudel had a different idea, allowing Groucho to work off the script. You Bet Your Life differed from all other quiz shows in that the quizzes were mere window dressing for the antics of the quizmaster. Marx didn't meet the couples prior to being brought on the air because Grudel, the producer, wanted him to be absolutely spontaneous. By the third year, the program arrived in radio's top 10 and won the Peabody Award, radio's equivalent of the Pulitzer, the first award ever given to a comedian on a quiz show. In 1949, You Bet Your Life moved to CBS, where the series continued until 1959, the last 9 years as an NBC entry. Return with us now to those fabulous days of yesteryear with You Bet Your Life from November of 1949, another classic program from the radio vault of yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow notes, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Merton Mar, Jamis, and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you so.
Ladies and gentlemen, the secret word tonight is grass. G-R-A-S-S.
Really?
You bet your life. Elgin American presents Groucho Marx in the Elgin American show, You'll Bet Your Life, the comedy quiz series produced and transcribed from Hollywood. And here's that Sterling, the one, the only...
Groucho! 30 days, next case. Oh, that's me, Groucho Marx! Thank you. Well, here I am again with $1,000 for one of our couples tonight. George Fannerman, who's first?
We invited some girls from the Los Angeles International Airport and some weather forecasters to the show tonight, and our studio audience selected Mrs. June Palmer and Mr. Delbert Van Ornum just before we went on the air. And here they are. Folks, meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome for Elgin American Complex. And if one of you says the secret word, he wins a 16-millimeter Apollo Sound movie projector that sells for $129.50. It's a common word, something you find around the house. Mr. Delbert Van Ornum?
That's right, sir.
You're the weatherman?
Yes, sir.
Where do you hail from?
I'm from Seattle, Washington.
Mm-hmm. Some people out there from Spokane. Are you married?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Any little squalls at home with the barometers dropping?
A boy and a girl.
A boy and a girl.
Yes.
Huh? And Miss Palmer, huh? That's a cute name, June Palmer. Sounds like a movie actor.
Thank you.
You're from the airport. What's your hometown?
Denver, Colorado.
Mm-hmm. Now, weatherman, Mr. Van Ornum, I think our listeners would be interested in knowing what kind of weather you've got lined up for tomorrow. Could you tell us?
Well, when I left the office, there was rain, snow, and winds up to 60 miles an hour, and Some fair weather.
Typical weatherman, all right. What do you mean? There was five different kinds of weather when you left the office?
Well, we deal with weather throughout the whole North American continent.
Oh, I see. Well, you certainly clouded the issue there. With that kind of a prediction, you'll have everybody wearing a bathing suit, galoshes, and a pith helmet. Now, where do you take these weird stabs at the weather, Mr. Van Ornum?
It's at the Crick Meteorological Consultant Service.
Crick?
Yes, Dr. Irving P. Crick.
I have a title home name, Irving. And I found him in a crick. Would he be in? What do you use for your prognosticating? A watermelon?
Well, we have a fairly scientific method.
Well, how do you find out? You look in the morning paper like all the rest of us?
No, we have a setup of teletypes, and we get weather reports from the Hawaiian Islands and Alaska and all through Canada and the Caribbean Sea.
What's the need of a private weather service like that? That's a private service?
Yes, sir.
Doesn't the Weather Bureau, the regular one, make enough mistakes to go around?
Well, they don't have enough money to give a personal service to individual industries. We have a gold placer mining company in Alaska, and then we have Los Angeles County Flood Control.
What's so funny about that? It's certainly a comic town we're living in. I mentioned Los Angeles, and everybody in the audience goes in hysterics. We're getting to be the Brooklyn of the West. Is your service always 100% accurate?
Well, we allow for a small margin of error.
I got caught in a small margin of error once. They finally had to extradite me from Canada. Well, right now, we have some wonderful gifts for each of you. George, would you mind doing the honors?
For Mrs. June Palmer, this lovely sterling silver compact with 14-karat gold engraving. An Elgin American, of course.
Oh, thank you. How perfectly lovely.
And for the weatherman Groucho, Elgin American's popular cigarette case with today's smart leather-like look.
That's wonderful. Wish you old cigars.
That's what we call looking a gift compact in the kisser. You're an ungrateful wretch. Now, Mrs. Palmer, let's get back to you, and that's not bad work. Now, just what do you do at the Los Angeles International Airport?
I'm an announcer.
Mm-hmm. You're much prettier than Panama back there. just what do you announce?
Arrivals and departures.
You mean you run a bath and obituary column?
Oh, no. Arrivals and departures of planes.
The arrival and departures of airplanes, I see. Well, how do you announce the arrival of an airplane? Mr. and Mrs. TWA Constellation wish to announce the arrival of a bouncing Piper Cub.
No, it's much less complicated
than
that.
The pilot is walking up and down nervous, handing out cigars.
No, it's not that complicated. We announce the arrival for the passengers, and we announce takeoff.
Mm-hmm. I can see I haven't lived a full life. What do they take off?
They take off the runway.
They take off on the runway? This is certainly the age of progress, all right. Now, Mrs. Palmer, where do your planes come from, and where do they go?
Well, we have them coming from Canada, we have planes coming from Paris, we have planes coming from Mexico City and going to Mexico City and Paris.
Well, suppose one of your planes is arriving from Mexico City, how do you announce it?
Pan American World Airways anuncia la llegada del vuelo 581, procedente de México, Centro y Sudamérica.
Tell me, does that always bring the swallows back to Capitol? Would you mind deciphering what you just said?
I simply said that a plane was arriving from Mexico City, Central and South America.
Suppose your plane hasn't been anywhere near Mexico. Suppose it's coming from Paris, sir. What do you say?
TWA annuncia l'arrivée de vol numéro 95.
I can keep this up as long as you can. Suppose it's breezing in from China.
TWA Constellation Flight 12. Now arriving at TWA Concourse.
Well, that's the first Chinese I ever understood. Well, you make an extremely interesting couple, and we're happy to have you here. Now, in just 1 minute, you're going to work together as a team for $1,000. Now, let's see if you two will get a chance at the $1,000 question. You're going to play your bet your life. Fenneman, give out with the rules.
Each of our three couples has $20. They bet as much of that $20 as they want on each of four questions. The couple that earns the most money gets a chance at the $1,000 question at the end of the show. Our other two couples are in a waiting room off stage, so they don't know what's happening out here.
Here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. You selected national parks as your category. Is that right? All right. Now, here's your first question. You have $20. How much are you going to risk?
$10.
All right. Where are the Carlsbad Caverns?
In Carlsbad, New Mexico.
That's right. Absolutely right.
We're off to a great start with $30.
Remember, you're going for $1,000 tonight. How much of your $30 will you try?
$15.
In what state is Glacier National Park?
Montana.
Montana is right.
Escalona way, they have $45.
All right, you've got $45. How much of the $45 you going to try?
$20.
In what state is Big Bend National Park?
California.
B-I-G-B-E-N-D.
Big Bend.
Oregon.
No, I'm sorry, the answer is Texas.
They now have $25.
How much of the $25 will you bet?
Ten.
All right, here we go. Where is Mammoth Cave National Park?
Kentucky.
In old Kentucky, is right.
And they wind up with a grand total of $35.
Thanks and good luck from Elgin American Compact. Now, stick around. You still have a chance for the big question.
Groucho, the secret word is still grass. Our next couple has been in a waiting room off stage, so they don't know what it is. Just before we went on the air, we selected two housewives from the audience, and here they come. Mrs. Ernestine Clark and Mrs. Capitola Fredrickson meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome, girls, for Elgin American Compacts. And if one of you says the secret word at any time we're talking, she'll win a 16-millimeter Apollo Sound movie projector. It's a common word, something you'll find around the house. Mrs. Ernestine Clark, you're a housewife, huh?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. How long have you been a housewife?
3 years.
Mrs. Capitola Friedrichsen?
Yes.
Sound like a German airport, huh? Capitola, is that Spanish?
No, it isn't. It's an Indian name, or Italian name, but I'm Indian.
Oh, well, what is your maiden name, your Indian name?
My Indian name is Capitola Celine Janat Oswandiv Tabasanakadok Kinu Caswell.
Well, that's very true. On the other hand, if you put in... is that really your name, or is that the treaty ending the French and Indian War?
Really, our name.
What does it mean, Capitola, in English?
Well, that means a girl with the dark brown hair flowing outwards under low clouds with a little eagle.
Should have kept the weatherman here, huh? did you say with a little eagle?
Well, that was our original family name. Gnu is the... That means little eagle.
Gnu?
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like Yiddish. Huh? You know, when you're through eating, you say, well, Gnu. So you're part Indian, eh?
Yes, I am.
Which part, Captain? I meant on which side of the family are you Indian?
Oh, my father was a full-blooded Indian.
Uh-huh. I'd be satisfied to have full blood of any kind. Eh? tell me, Indian Summer, how long have you been married?
I've been married 9 years.
Mm-hmm. And what does your husband do besides complain about the grocery bill?
He works in a post office.
What does your husband do, Ernestine?
He's an actor.
An actor? Oh, well, that's too bad, huh? Is anything being done about it? You have any little hams in the icebox at home? You look mighty cute with those bangs and everything. What did you do before you hooked your husband, huh?
I was with the circus.
You were with the circus?
That's right.
Oh. What did you do with the circus?
I was a bareback rider.
Oh. Was it a flea circus?
No, there's only one circus.
There's only one circus?
That's right. Ringling Brothers, Barnum and Bailey.
Oh, that's the one you were in, huh? Mm-hmm. That's my favorite circus. Tell me, is Jenny Lind, the Swedish Nightingale, still with him?
Not for the last 100 years or so.
Well, I haven't been to the circus lately. What? You say you were a bareback rider?
That's right.
Did you lose your shirt on a horse?
No, the horse's back was bare. Not mine.
You mean the horse lost his shirt, huh? What he gets for betting on the human race. Huh? How long were you with the circus?
All my life, and I'm returning in a few weeks.
Mm-hmm. Do you use any special horse, or can any horse be trained?
No, we have to have a special horse. Uh-huh.
Tell us about your act in the circus. What do you do on the horse besides ride horseback?
I dance.
You dance on a horse?
That's right.
What kind of a dance? A foxtrot?
No, ballet dancing.
Oh, ballet dance? You drink a pony of brandy or anything before you start?
No, that's not
You do a ballet? Well, whose ballet? Is the horse's ballet? Or? I thought you rode on his back.
I do.
Well, what made you decide to become a bareback rider?
I had no choice in the matter. My mother and father were bareback riders, my grandparents and my great-grandparents and so on back for about five or six generations.
Well, in other words, you were practically born on a horse. Is that
That's right?
Mm-hmm. You must have been a bouncing baby, huh? So when you're traveling with the circus, what do you do for amusement? Do you go to the circus in the evening if you're bored? Or what do you do, huh?
Well, we bareback riders have a softball team.
A softball team?
Uh-huh, and the midgets
Who do you
have
play?
A softball team. Well, we play the midgets.
Play the midgets, huh? Mm-hmm. Nice team. Nine shortstops, huh? Now, all this talk sounds very exciting. Will your act be all complete when you return to the circus in a few weeks?
Almost.
Well, maybe this is my big chance. What else do you need to complete your act, huh?
I need another horse.
Well, Barnum is right. There's one born every minute. Well, I must say we're delighted to have you both here tonight. You're both wonderful kids. Now, let's play You Bet Your Life for $1,000. You run your $20 into more than the other couples, and you get a chance at the big question later. Fenneman's offstage to remind our listeners how much the first couple won.
The weatherman and the airport girl won $35.
Here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. You selected Western songs. Is that right?
Yes.
Now, you have $20, and here's your first question. How much would you bet?
We'll bet 10.
Jerry Fielding will play, and you identify the song. Okay, Jerry.
Wagon wheel.
Wagon wheel to the right.
They're on their way with $30.
Well, remember, you're going for $1,000 tonight. That's the big prize. Now, you've got $30. How much of the $30 are you going to try?
$25.
Give me the title of this Western song.
Cheyenne.
Cheyenne is right.
They're really on their way now. They have $55.
All right, you've got $55. Here's your third question. How much of the $55 are you going to try? All right, what's the name of this Western song? Play, Jerry.
Red River Valley.
Red River Valley.
They now have $105.
Well, you're right up at the top of those three rings up there. You've got $105, and here's your last chance to beat the other couples. How much will you bet?
90, she says.
How much?
90.
Let's see if you can identify this song. Thanks and good luck from Elgin American Compacts. Now, in just 1 minute, our last couple will play You Bet Your Life, and then we know who gets the $1,000 question. But right now, I want you to pay attention to this.
Learn more about the golden age of radio at radioyesteryear.org. That's radioyesteryear.org. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
Now then, we'll soon know who's going to earn the most money and get the chance at the $1,000 question. George, who's ahead so far?
Well, the housewives are leading with $195. Our final couple doesn't know the secret word is grass. They've been in a waiting room offstage, and perhaps they'll say it. We asked for two young people who'd like to get married if they found the right person. And just before we went on the air, the studio audience selected Mr. Gordy Wright and Miss Virginia Owens to be his partner. Folks, meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome, kids, to You Bet Your Life. And if one of you says the secret word at any time we're talking, he'll win a 16-millimeter Apollo Sound movie projector. It's a common word, something you'll find around the house. Now, Fenneman says you two would like to get married if you found the right partner. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, perhaps I can be of some assistance. Virginia Owens, is that right?
That's right.
Where are you from, Virginia?
No, Minneapolis.
Minneapolis? I didn't know that was in Virginia.
No, it isn't. My name's Virginia.
Oh, well, I'm glad to know you. My name's Groucho Marx. Now, tell me, Minneapolis. I'll just call you Minnie, eh? Why did you leave Virginia?
No, my name's Virginia.
Oh. That sounds familiar. Haven't I met you someplace before? Why did you leave Minneapolis? Because it isn't in Virginia?
No, not exactly. I came out here to take a try at the movies.
Mm-hmm. And did you get in?
Not so far.
Have you tried purchasing a ticket? Have you abandoned all hope for a film career, Virginia?
Oh, definitely not.
Why don't you try it? Of course, we gave up hope for a film career. Mr. Gordy Wright, huh? Is that Gordy Wright? Look very gaudy. You look right, but not gaudy. Now, where are you from, Mr. Wright?
My home state is Louisiana.
Mm-hmm. So far, this person has been from 11 states tonight. You must be the Arkansas traveler, huh? Now, what is this nonsense about you wanting to get married? Is that right, Gordy?
Well, that's right. You if I could like find the right kind of a girl.
Virginia, did you say you'd like to get married?
Mm-hmm.
How long have you been looking for a husband?
Months.
Well, don't be discouraged. A friend of mine got married 4 years ago, and she's still looking for a husband. Tell me, Virginia, what kind of a man are you looking for? Huh?
Oh, gee, someone that's about medium height and intelligent, and someone who's a good rumba dancer. And
you want an intelligent man who can do a rumba, huh? That's two different men. You'll get arrested for bigamy. Huh? Gordy, can you rumba?
Well, I can wiggle.
Let's find out some more about you two. What sort of work do you do, Mr. Wright?
A salesman.
Mm-hmm. Well, my next joke may be the death of a salesman. What do you sell?
I sell Smart and Final Company food products. One of our best-known items is the Smart and Final coffee, the S&F coffee, and, of course, our fine fruits and vegetables.
You think coffee will really go up to $1 a pound?
I couldn't say, sir.
Well, I don't know why you can't. Even if you don't believe it, you could say it. I won't tell anybody. Now, Virginia, where do you work?
I'm a special sales representative for the Bazooka Bubblegum Company.
Well, blow me down. Well, for a beautiful girl, that sounds like a pretty important executive job. Just what do you do, mostly, Virginia?
Blow bubbles.
Job like that could blow right up in your face, couldn't it? What do you mean, you blow bubble gum? You walk around the street blowing bubble gum?
Well, not exactly. I go to nightclubs and veterans' hospitals and teach everyone how to blow bubbles.
Mm-hmm. How did you ever land a job like that?
I was chosen out of a group of models to represent Miss Bazooka.
You're Miss Bazooka, right?
Mm-hmm.
You must be loaded, huh?
Well...
How old are you, Minneapolis? I mean, Virginia.
21.
And how old are you, Gordy?
28.
28. Coincidence. That's just what I am. 21 and 28. Who knows? Maybe you two are meant for each other. Do you have any definite ideas about the kind of person you're looking for? Say, about 5'5", Gordy?
Just about right.
Eyes that are full of mischief? A figure that stands out in the crowd.
Wonderful.
Stop looking at Virginia when you answer me, huh? Now, if this person answered all this description, and plus that was a movie star, do you think you could fall in love?
I know I could.
Kiss me, you fool. That's me, Groucho. And remember, Virginia, if he gets all puckered up, he's not interested in snapping his bubble gum. Huh? Well, you're a mighty cute couple, and I hope you'll go through life together blowing bubbles. Huh? Now, we'd like each of you to have gifts from our sponsors. Now, let's play You Bet Your Life. If you can beat our other two couples in the quiz, you'll get a crack at the $1,000 question. I can't tell you how much they won, but George is off stage to remind our listeners.
The bareback rider and the housewife are ahead with $195.
Here we go. Let's see how high I can build you to your $20. You selected personalities behind the movie scenes as your category, okay?
Sure.
All right, here's your first question. How much will you bet?
$10.
What is Percy Westmore's job in the making of a movie?
Makeup.
Makeup man is right.
They're on their way with $30.
Remember, you're going for $1,000 tonight. How much of your $30 will you try?
$20.
Okay. $20. What is Max Steiner's job in the movies?
Makeup. No. Designer. Hairdresser.
No, you've had three good, healthy answers, Max but you're Steiner. Still wrong, huh?
Max Steiner's a cameraman.
No, that's four answers, but he's the musical director, huh?
They now have $10.
We go out of our way to be kindly around here. Now, here's your third question. How much of the $10 will you try?
$5.
All right. What is Edith Head's job in the movies?
Designer.
Lowe's designer is right.
They're on the way again. They have $15.
Now you have $15, and here's your last chance to beat the other couple. How much of the 15?
Shoot the word.
What is Natalie Kalmus's job in making pictures?
Technicolor director.
Technicolor director is right.
And they wind up with $30. And that means the two housewives, with $195, get the chance at the $1,000 question. And here's the winning couple, Groucho, the two housewives.
Ready to try for $1,000. All right, good luck, and I'll give you 15 seconds to decide on a single answer between you, so talk it over thoroughly and no help in the audience, please. Let's see how much you know about your government. $1,000. Who is the Senate Majority Leader? What is the answer you two have decided upon?
We haven't. I can think of is Fielding or...
No, I'm sorry. It's Senator Scott Lucas.
Oh.
I'm sorry. That's the correct answer. That means the big question next week will be worth $1,500. Well, you lost the big money, but you received those lovely gifts from Elgin American, and you won $195. Congratulations and thanks to both of you.
The Elgin American Show, You Bet Your Life, is a John Goodell production. Transcribed from Hollywood, directed by Bob Dwan and Bernie Smith. Music by Jerry Fielding. Remember, next week's big question pays $1,500. Be sure to tune in again next Wednesday night at this time for You Bet Your Life, starring Groucho Marx.
From November of 1949, it's been You Bet Your Life, starring Groucho Marx. In a moment, The Whistler with Shadow of a Mind as this edition of Yesteryear continues.
Learn more about the golden age of radio at radioyesteryear.org. That's radioyesteryear.org. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
The Whistler, with echoing footsteps and a haunting whistle, flowed on to CBS in 1942. The whistle, 13 notes, destined to become one of the all-time lingering melodies of old-time radio. In the melodramatic early years, The Whistler was written and produced by Donald Wilson. The program served up generous portions of ironic commentary, tales full of twists and surprises, usually containing a fine double twist in the end. And despite memorable nature of its format, the program had a rather spotty record on the air. For most of the run, it was heard only regionally, billed over the Western CBS network through the mid-1940s as the Pacific Coast Leading Mystery Show. The Whistler was played through most of the run by Bill Foreman. Wilbur Hatch, who composed the haunting theme, once estimated that only one person in 20 could come close to whistling the melody. Return with us now to those fabulous days of yesteryear with The Whistler and Shadow of a Mind from May of 1943, another classic radio moment from the archives of yesteryear.
Have you heard the strange tales of The Whistler?
Not again, please. I can scarcely think now. I won't be able to think at all if you do it again. Please, I couldn't stand it. There just won't be anything left if you do. Please.
Another Saturday night, and again, CBS presents The Whistler.
I, The Whistler, know many things, for I walk by night.
I know many strange tales, many secrets hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. And so I tell you tonight, the weird story of Shadow of a Mind. See that man working there in his laboratory? That's Dr. William Richter. He's brilliant. He works hard at his research because he believes he can do more for posterity through research than he could had he continued his regular practice as a surgeon, the brain surgeon. It's good that a doctor can retire from his practice and have a laboratory all his own, with all expenses paid, where he may carry on his experiments. It's good also that he can afford an assistant.
Ernest? Ernest?
Yes, doctor.
Come here, will you? Think there's something here you should see?
Certainly, doctor. Yes, doctor? What is it?
This piece of tissue. I've just taken it out of the solution.
Oh, yes, that's the tissue from the monkey's brain.
Yes.
Seems to be alive still.
Yes, the solution has kept it in perfect condition, at least to all outward appearances.
Of course, we can't really tell until it's tried along with undisturbed tissue.
That's right. That's just what we're going to do.
Today? You're going to try it today?
Yes. Remember the little chimpanzee we brought in last week?
Yes.
Prepare him, will you? We'll try the experiment at once.
Oh, it will be wonderful if it works. Wonderful for humanity, I mean.
Well, that's why I'm doing this work, Ernest. Because of the great benefit it would be to mankind if I can find a way to keep tissue living when completely severed from a body.
And then replace it. That will be wonderful.
I don't mind telling you, Ernest, that if this experiment is successful, we will have gone a long way toward proving the feasibility of tissue transplantation. Then there will remain only to try it with larger sections of tissue. Who knows? Perhaps sometime due to our experiments, man will be able to perform this operation on complete sections of the human brain.
It's a great work you're doing, Doctor.
Yes. Now, prepare the animal, will you?
Yes, Doctor.
Yes. A great work, Doctor. Such a benefit to mankind. And such a benefit to you if it's a success and to those whom you love.
Come in. Oh, Elaine. Hello, I'm glad to see you.
Oh, I didn't want to disturb you, Father, but I have wonderful news. Terribly important.
Wait a minute. Don't you think you should give me an opportunity to at least say good afternoon to your young man?
Oh, I'm sorry, Father.
How do you do, sir? Hello, John. And now, Elaine, what is this news that is so vital?
It's about John and me. That's why I brought John along. We're going to be married.
We came to ask your permission, sir.
You're in love?
Oh, yes, Father.
Very much, sir.
Oh, at least that's what you think now.
But, Father...
Oh, I know. Love hits you hard when you're young. I just want you to be sure, my dear. You see, this comes as rather a surprise to me.
A surprise?
Yes, a surprise, and I might say a slight disappointment.
Disappointment?
Yes, I'd hope you'd finish your school and then come here to help me.
Oh, I know how you feel about your work, Father. I know how important it is to you. It's important to me, too. I want you to continue it, but... Well, I don't want to give up love simply to assist you. Don't you see, it's your work, not mine. Marriage is what I want.
Yes. How soon do you wish to marry?
As soon as possible, sir.
Then I can only tell you that I advise strongly against it. As you know, Elaine, I cannot order you not to marry this man.
No, Father, you've been wonderful to me. I want to repay your kindness. And I think I can do so better if I'm leading a happy, normal life.
I hope you're right, Elaine. I can still only advise against this marriage. If you do it, you will do so against my will and judgment.
The specimen is ready, Doctor.
Huh? Oh, thank you, Ernest. And now, if you'll excuse me, I'm in the midst of a rather important experiment.
Just a moment, Father. If there's something about John to which you object, I think it's only fair that you should tell us now.
Oh, my objection has nothing to do with John. I admire him. I've always considered him a brilliant young man. Oh,
thank you, sir.
If I wished you to marry anyone at this time, I should assume it were John as anyone else.
Then why? What is it, Father?
It is simply my wish that you do not marry at this time. You see, my dear, I'm not young, and the thought of losing you perhaps makes me slightly selfish about you. I only ask that you consider my request. I do not demand that you obey it. Oh, I'm talking too much. I must go. Think it over. Carefully.
Oh, I'm sorry, Johnny. I had no idea he'd behave this way about it. I thought he'd be glad. He's always been so nice to me. I thought, of course, he'd be happy to see me married.
Well, he didn't seem much concerned over your happiness. He seemed more interested in the effect your marriage was going to have on him or his works.
But if I were happy, you'd think he would be. I don't see how marrying you could have any adverse effect on him.
I wonder.
Several days have passed during which John has thought about it, wondered why the doctor doesn't want his daughter to marry, thought and searched for a reason, and he's found that reason. But he hasn't told Elaine, not until he has another talk with the doctor privately. John and Elaine are driving along the twisting highway to her home.
Why on earth did your father ever have his laboratory in such an out-of-the-way place?
Oh, he worked a lot with animals. They might disturb people if he had close neighbors.
Yes, I suppose so. Looks as though he might have picked a straighter road.
Johnny, why are you so certain that you can convince Father our marriage is the right thing?
Well, the only reason he objected was because of what it might do to him. I know what that was. And I can assure him that the result of our marriage won't be what he feared.
But why won't you tell me?
Oh, now, darling, don't you worry about that. Here, give me a kiss.
Oh, Johnny, Johnny, look out! The bridge! Look out! We're going over!
You were careless, John. You needn't have had that wreck if you'd been watching. Even in your haste to settle things with the doctor, you should have been more careful. More careful with the life of the woman you loved. Now her father works feverishly trying to bring her to.
Will she?
Quiet. Looking pretty bad. I'm afraid it's a concussion.
Yes, but will she?
I suppose you are satisfied now. Should have forbidden her seeing you rather than suggesting it would be better for her not to marry.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm terribly sorry. I wouldn't have had her hurt for the world.
And why did you insist on going out?
I love her.
Oh.
I do love her. I hope she loves me. If she's still willing, I'm going to marry her just as soon as she's able.
Well, looks as though it will be some time before she's even able to discuss such a matter.
But she will be all right, won't she? I mean, later. You'll do all you can, now, won't you?
She's my daughter. I shall do anything in my power to help her. However, I shall undertake it because I want her to get well, not because you do.
Oh, I know how you feel about me. I came here to tell you that our marriage would make no difference in your plans. But that's not important now. The only thing of importance is her recovery. I want you to know if there's anything I can do, you can count on me.
What you can do probably will not be much. However, we shall see.
Not much you could do, John. If you'd only realized then just how much you would do, maybe you wouldn't have been so anxious. It hasn't been pleasant, though, has it, all these days of waiting? Waiting while Elaine came out of her coma and then lapsed back in again. And when the doctor operated on her, that was hard on you, too. These short visits you've been allowed with her. Does it seem strange that the doctor won't let you stay too long in the room with her?
You'll have to leave now, John. Remember, I told you could only have a few minutes.
Oh, yes, all right. I'll come again soon, Elaine. And don't you worry. Everything will be all right.
Goodbye, John. I hope you can come again soon.
What do you mean everything would be all right?
Oh, just about us.
Well, what does he know about it? What does he know about your condition?
He thinks, as I do, that I'll soon be well.
Oh, does he?
Yes. Won't I?
We shall see. What else did he tell you?
That he loved me enough to give up anything in the world for me.
Are you still as much in love with him as you were?
Oh, yes, Father. More so.
Then I want you to tell him that you will marry him.
Oh, Father, you... Oh, Father, I knew you'd see. I knew you'd want me to be happy. I knew you'd see what was best.
Yes, I do see what's best. Probably better than you.
Well, what do you mean?
Elaine, you know how much you've always meant to me.
Yes, you've always been very good to me, Father.
Then believe me when I tell you I know what's best for you. Tell John you will marry him right away.
But why so soon?
Because it is important.
But your attitude has changed so... Have you grown to like him?
Oh, I've scarcely seen him.
Well, then what's the reason for this sudden reversal of your feelings?
I was looking at it before from the standpoint of an ordinary marriage with the average benefits and drawbacks. But now, my dear, we must look at it differently.
I don't understand.
This will be no ordinary marriage, Elaine. It will be a marriage in which you alone will benefit.
I don't understand.
Oh, my dear, I would rather do anything in the world than to tell you what I have to, but your accident, well, it left... Well,
Well, you're just not improving satisfactorily.
What do you mean?
A growth has started where I removed that clot. I've got to operate again, and I cannot say how successful I'll be.
You mean you're afraid it won't be a success? And that's why you want me to marry John?
Yes, because I know what may happen if it isn't. And I want you to have all the things you want while you have the chance.
But that wouldn't be fair to him.
He's always said he would give up everything. Well, now he will have the chance.
Oh, no, I won't do it that way. I wanted to marry him because I thought we'd have a happy life together. I don't want him to do all the giving.
You've got to, Elaine.
No.
But you are going to need him, Elaine. Need him more than you can possibly imagine. Things are, John. She told me how much you love her, and now's your chance to prove it.
Oh, Elaine, my poor girl. It's awful.
There's not a thing I can do except try and prolong the final outcome. She may go on for years this way, but someday she will crack and her mind will become a complete blank. She's going to need somebody then. Somebody that loves her as much as you say you do.
Oh, there's no question about that. Of course I love her.
And you will still marry her after what I've told you?
Well, yes, of course. That can't make me love her any less.
Then you will try and convince her that it is best that she marry you.
Yes, I will. Because, you see, regardless of what you think, I do think it's best. I always have.
I think so, too. Now.
Don't you see, darling, this can't make any difference in my love for you. Simply that you've got to undergo another operation.
Yes, but Father said he couldn't be certain how it would turn out.
I think he's pretty certain.
He told you then?
Yes.
And it doesn't really make any difference.
Except that I've waited longer, and now I love you more.
Oh, John.
So please, darling, say you're man.
You still think it's wise?
Yes, I know it is.
All right, John. I'll marry you.
When? How soon?
Anytime you say, John.
It's good to know that someone loves you enough to marry you even when you're ill, isn't it, Elaine? Only you don't know what John knows. You think you have a chance, but John knows better. The doctor told him. He loves you enough to give up anything, though. Yet he doesn't suspect what he's going to be called upon to do, and neither do you, Elaine. Neither do you, but the doctor knows. He knows what sacrifices both he and John must make for you.
Doctor, can I speak to you for a moment?
Oh, of course. What do you want?
It's about Elaine. She seems to be getting worse. She's been in a coma every time I've seen her in the last several days.
Yes?
Is she really worse? Do you know what's causing the comas?
I do.
Well, isn't there something you can do, some way to stop them?
I have something in mind. I shall have the opportunity to try it soon.
And you think you can?
We can only hope. Oh, by the way, I may need your help in the morning. I suggest you get a good night's rest.
Are you going in to see her now?
Yes.
Then may I go in with you?
You are very nervous tonight. I don't think your presence would be good for her. Besides, I want you to rest. We have quite a task ahead of us in the morning.
Oh, yes, but...
I suggest you go to your room now. Or here, in this envelope are some sleeping powders. Be sure you take them. You'll need a good night's rest.
Yes, but Elaine...
If you will cooperate, I think I can assure you that Elaine will improve rather rapidly from now on. Now, please do as I say.
Well, all right, then. And good night. And please let me know in the morning.
I shall.
Elaine?
Elaine, dear, are you awake? Elaine?
Oh, Father.
Wake up, Elaine.
I didn't realize I'd been asleep.
Didn't you?
No, don't feel as though I'd been asleep, exactly.
Oh, don't worry about that. I want to talk to you.
What about?
Please, my dear, don't let this upset you too much, but I'm afraid we have to operate again. Oh. That is our only way out, otherwise you'll lose your mind.
My mind? Oh, Father.
Easy, Elaine. I told you there's a way out.
Way out?
Yes, you see, I have known for a long time this was going to be necessary. The growth has started again, and it's spreading. And wherever it's spread, that part of your brain is dead, so I must remove that part.
I must trust you, Father. I know if any surgeon can do it, you can.
I can remove it, I'm certain of that. The question is, in what condition it will leave you?
What do you mean?
Well, it's too large a part of your brain to leave you, well, entirely the same. It's the part that controls your will. We can't just remove it and leave you that way.
But how?
That is where John and his willingness to sacrifice for you comes in.
I don't understand.
I am going to perform the same operation on John.
But there's nothing wrong with John's brain.
No.
He has a brilliant mind.
I know. That's why we chose him.
We chose him? I don't understand.
I told you once that you were going to need somebody that really loved you. Somebody willing to give up everything for you.
And that's why you wanted me to marry him.
Yes. You see, it was the only way to save my little girl. He seemed like a very intelligent young man. That was important because, you see, I didn't want just anybody's brain taking the place of that part of yours, which I shall remove.
You mean you're going to...
Yes.
Oh, Father, listen to me. I love John. You can't do this thing to him. Oh, let me die. I don't want to live if it means this. Please, Father, listen to me.
I'm probably the only brain surgeon in the world who can do it, and I've prepared well. Everything is ready, including John.
Father, please.
Oh, you mustn't become over rotty, Lane. Here. I'll just give you this hypodermic. There. And it will quiet you.
Oh, but Father...
Don't you see, my dear? If I succeed in this, it will be just like handing back life to the little girl whom I love.
But if you fail... If you fail, Father...
There's no reason why you should fear any ill effects.
But John...
I am perfectly confident that the operation will be a success from John's standpoint as well. But even if I do fail, it will be better than letting you live on without a mind.
Father, you can't do this. You're mad. That's it. You're mad. Father, you're mad. You couldn't dream of such a thing if you weren't.
Not only can dream of it, I'm going to do it. And when it is over, you'll be glad you had a father who was willing to do this for you.
Father...
Quiet, Elaine. Soon the medicine will take effect and you'll be unconscious. And when you awaken, a part of John's brain will have taken the place of that part of yours that's diseased.
The operation was a success. A complete success for Elaine. A fine piece of surgery, Doctor. You must feel highly pleased with your ability. A pity this operation can't become a contribution to surgical science. But I doubt that you'd want the world to know. And you, Elaine, you look so different since you've been up and around. Your will seems so strong. And your attitude toward John. What's happened to your love for him?
Elaine, what are you getting ready to do?
I'm going out.
You're going out again?
Yes, do you mind?
Well, I thought, maybe you'd stay with me tonight. You were out last night. It's awfully lonesome just sitting here in this room. Never getting out, never seeing anyone.
You're in no condition to see anyone.
But I'd like to see you, Elaine. When you stay home, I like to see you.
Well, I'm not staying home. I'm not sitting around here spending another dull evening with you.
Suppose I am dull. I can't think. I had something I wanted to tell you. I remembered it this afternoon, something I intended doing before we were married. Oh, I can't remember what it was.
Oh, you can't remember anything. All you can do is sit around and whine.
Oh, why do you talk to me like that, Elaine? You used to love me. I remember you said you loved me once. And I love you, Elaine. I've always loved you. What have I done to make you stop loving me?
Don't you know?
It seems like there was something... Something I did that concerns you, but I don't just remember what it was.
You really don't remember, do you?
No.
I wonder if you ever really knew.
You're very smug about it, Elaine. Is that a normal way to treat a man who gave up so much for you? Oh, but you're not entirely normal anymore, are you? Maybe that's because you're no longer completely Elaine. You have parts of two minds, yours and John's, his will. You couldn't be expected to have completely normal reactions. No, not with two minds.
Elaine, may I come in?
Certainly.
Thank you.
Not at all. What do you want, Father?
Elaine, I hardly know how to say this, but I've got bad news for you.
About
your trouble. Those x-ray pictures we took, they show a return of the growth. We didn't get it all last time.
Is it bad?
Well, it's very small now. If we get it soon enough, we should be safe.
Then you're going to have to operate again.
Yes, if we're to save your mind.
And what about Elaine? What's going to happen to her?
What did you say?
I said... Funny, I don't remember what I said.
Never mind. Do you think John will be agreeable?
Oh, he's agreeable to anything I want. He doesn't seem to do anything at his own volition. Just what I wish him to do.
Then you had better tell him.
All right. John. John, come in here.
He's been a very good husband for you, Elaine.
Yes, hasn't he? Not as husband's go, perhaps, but...
You tell me to come in here, Elaine?
Yes.
Well,
John, do you still love me?
Oh, you know I love you. I always have.
Then you can do something more for me.
Oh, well, that's good. What can I do for you, Elaine?
The same thing. Again.
The same thing? Well, I don't remember. Oh, no. No, I didn't do anything for you. You did something to me. Don't do it again. Not again, please. I can scarcely think now. I won't be able to think at all if you do. I couldn't stand it. There just won't be anything left.
Oh, yes, there will. There will be me. And you love me. Remember, John?
Another good job, Doctor. Another great piece of surgery. No one else could have done it. The first time, taking just the part of John's brain which controlled his will. Giving that to Elaine and making her will so strong she cared nothing for anyone but herself. And leaving John so that he'd resist no more. That was well done. And this time, just a little bit more. Only this time you made a mistake, Doctor. This time you took too much of John's brain. This time you took the part that remembers. You took too much, Doctor. And now John is dead. You've given his will to Elaine, and now his memory. And the part of John's mind that remembers also hates, Doctor.
Come in.
Oh, Elaine, my dear. Come in, my child. I didn't expect you so late. Elaine, what are you doing with that gun?
I have something to settle with you, Doctor.
Why? I don't understand. You have never called me Doctor before, Elaine.
It is not Elaine you're dealing with, Doctor.
What do you mean?
This is John. You killed my body, but you put my mind in this body. My will and my memory. This body is Elaine's, but these thoughts are John's.
That is impossible.
Not for you, Doctor, not for the great brain surgeon. For this time you've gone too far, you and Elaine. You took my mind, only you took too much of it. And now it is no longer Elaine. It is I, John, who controls the actions of this body. And the mind of John hates you for what you did.
I only did it to save my little girl.
Had you not objected to the marriage in the first place, nothing would ever have happened.
What do you mean?
I remember now. Now John's thoughts remember what it was he found out about your objection to the marriage. That's what we were coming to tell you when we had the accident. John found out about your wife's will.
What?
The money that made it possible for you to continue your work would all go to Elaine when she married.
Oh, but...
You didn't want that, did you, Doctor? Because you weren't her real father.
But I've always loved you as a real father. I've done everything for you.
Excuse me, Doctor. For Elaine. You forget you're dealing with the memory of John. And with his will and his memory in this body, you can see why it's perfectly natural to kill you.
Wait. Now listen to me. For a long time, I've known that something went wrong, and I didn't intend it that way, but I have prepared for it. I have a signal bell connected with this room to the laboratory. Ernest has been instructed to come here immediately upon hearing it. Well, I was just wrong that he'll be here in a second. You wouldn't dare to kill me because you'd be convicted as a murderer.
How many times do you think a man can be afraid of death, Doctor?
Oh?
Remember, you've been through the process of killing my body for a long time now. I shall be easier on you. I shall kill you quickly now with this gun.
That gun, stop her.
Good heavens. Stand back, Ernest. I have no desire to harm you. He's the only one my memory hates. The only one my will says to kill.
You killed your father.
No, Ernest, I didn't.
But I saw. I stood here and watched you kill him.
Yes, but Elaine didn't pull that trigger, and he was not my father.
I'll call the police.
Stop. Stand over there in that corner. Now throw me the keys to the car. That's it. Now stay here. If you try to follow me, I'll kill you.
And so you've settled scores, haven't you, John? Your mind, together with Elaine's body, have made him pay for his greed. But where are you going? It's really over. Why do you hurry so? Why do you drive so fast? Do you know where you're going? Remember, this is a crooked road, and that bridge ahead, that's where it all started, remember? The wheel. Is something pulling on it? Pulling it off to the left? Pulling harder than you can pull? What could have a hold of it? You're alone. But something is pulling the wheel around, isn't it? Pulling it until... That's really the best way. They couldn't go on with John's mind and thoughts in Elaine's body. And now they're all dead. John, William, and Elaine. John, the innocent victim. Elaine, the guilty accomplice. And William, the great brain surgeon who tried so hard to save Elaine. You think so? Well, what neither of them knew was that there was never anything wrong with Elaine's brain in the first place. Her comas were induced by medicines administered by William in his efforts to convince them that something was wrong with her. Because that way, he'd have a reason for attempting his fiendish experiment in brain surgery. He was a good surgeon. He was too good. But he didn't think his transplantation of brain tissue might also carry with it the will and memory. And when a will as strong as John's combines with the memories he had, well, you could hardly blame him for killing the doctor, could you?
From May of 1943, it's been The Whistler and Shadow of a Mind. That's all the time we have for today, but join us again next week and invite a friend to listen. Together, enjoy more great moments from the golden age of radio. I'm Craig Roberts with those fabulous days of yesteryear. Till next time, so long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, I miss you so. Dio, volio, dodio, do.
Preceding program, copyright Edgewater Productions. All rights reserved. KSSR DB San Francisco, where the big bands swing.